Hello, it is 5 o'clock and you are listening to Radio 613 on CFRC 101.9, 90.9 and on cable, broadcasting live from the basement of Carruthers Hall in Kingston, Ontario. Hayiti be'eretz Nachmiya. She, Zipporah, bore a son whom he, Moses, named Gershom. For he said, I have been a stranger in a foreign land.
Beger lo tene velo tilchatz, ki gerim eitem be'eretz Mitzrayim. Kol almana v'yitam lo ta'an, im ane ta'ane ot ki im ta'ak yitzchak elai shemo eshma tzakat. V'chara api v'haragat gizitzi etchem b'charev v'chai nishechem almanat b'nechem yitomim. You shall not wrong a stranger or oppress them, for you are strangers in the land of Mitzrayim. You shall not ill-treat any widow or orphan. If you do mistreat them, I will heed their outcry as soon as they cry out to me, and my anger shall blaze forth, and I will put you to the sword, and your own wives shall become widows, and your children's orphans.
Ra'achat yiyeh la'ezrach ve'lager hagar betchechem. There shall be one law for the citizen and for the stranger who dwells among you.
When a stranger resides with you in your land, you shall not wrong him. The stranger who dwells with you be to you as one of your children, one of your citizens. You shall love him as yourself, for you are strangers in the lands of Mitzrayim. The Torah contains no fewer than 36 variations on this theme. Commandment after commandment is coupled with a reminder that we who have experienced pain in Mitzrayim must be sensitive to the pain of others. That we who have experienced injustice must deal justly and also generously with our fellows. The social legislation of the Torah and its passionate concern for the welfare of the stranger, the underprivileged, the widow, the orphan, is bonded to this deeply implanted communal memory.
Welcome to Radio 613, listeners. We just heard from some sections of the Tanakh, and then Sean was just reading a commentary from one of the Haggadahs that we read from. During Pesach, We're speaking on these issues of Exodus, particularly today because of the National Day for Migrant Justice, but also because I think it's something that needs to be at the forefront of our minds as observant Jews at all times.
We'll be featuring an interview with a local migrant justice activist, but before we get to that, we'd like to share a clip with you from a recent action in Toronto at which our dear minister, Jason Kenney, was speaking. So let's hear what some of the folks in Toronto had to say.
Who will be doing the talking? Not the temporary foreign workers themselves, not the folks coming on the program being deported, not the folks who aren't allowed to apply for permanent residency under new regulations.
We still have a long question.
And none of them are being answered. And they haven't been answered for a long time by groups who have been resisting a lot of these changes and who have been seeing a significant increase in the
exploitation. Okay, I'm asking you to please respect the one question rule. Thank you.
Mr. Kenney, we're also not fooled by your visits to mosques and various immigrant community organizations. What we're seeing is a clear doublespeak here, where you're claiming to protect the rights of newcomers, but we're seeing a gutting of the refugee system. This isn't about quoting anyone's press release. It's about your own announcement. You've refused to comment on the murder of a Mexican woman who filed not one, but two refugee claims in Canada, Mr. Kenney, and was denied. And she was deported to Mexico, and her pregnant body was found in a ditch. And you have refused to comment. And what you've done instead is you've announced that you're going to cut refugee quotas by 60% next year. You've announced horrific changes to the temporary foreign worker program. You have fancy language for it that talks about access and success and incorporating the needs of newcomers, but we know that this is doublespeak, this is lies. You are an anti-immigrant minister. You're fundamentally racist. Your Twitter posts.
Do you have
about
a question, ma'am?
Yes, will you be?
This is a comment.
Okay, I'm sorry. You can do your own parallel press conference. This is done.
I'm not interested in whether it's a comment period, so.
Just respond briefly.
Without doublespeak, please, this time.
I'm proud to belong to a government that is
exploiting people, discriminating, deporting
newcomers in Canadian history. Last year, we received more newcomers to Canada than any other year since
double
speak. Since
those were more temporary workers.
They were temporary workers. They were not citizens.
More exploitative temporary workers. These are not paths to permanent residency or full and inclusive status for people.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for being here.
Those stats are untrue.
Unfortunately, we're closing right now. Thank you. You can stay around and have a conversation with
so
each
no
other.
Position thanks. From the thank minister on please. This yet
the
again.
Minister, quietly, let's go.
That was some sound footage from No One Is Illegal's questions at a presentation by Minister of Immigration Jason Kenney this past week. Jason Kenney, as you could hear the rumbling at the end, was running away and avoiding questions. So we've shared the stuff we've shared on the show so far today because today, as we mentioned, is the National Day of Justice. The National Day of Justice for Migrant Workers, National Day of Action for and Justice for Migrant Workers, excuse me. And to talk a little bit more about this, we have invited Usman, a local migrant justice activist, on the show. So welcome to the show, Usman.
Hello, everyone.
Usman, can you tell us a little bit what is Justice for Migrant Workers?
Sure. By the way, for your listeners who weren't obviously seeing that video. It was kind of awesome that No One Is Legal activists chased Jason Kenney down like a fire escape hatch to his car. So I found that particularly amusing. But what they're protesting and what this day of action and justice is about is about new regulations that were put in place on October 9 by the Canadian government and by the immigration branch of the Canadian government for temporary workers. And these regulations will go into effect December 9. So this day of action and justice was to protest these regulations going into effect. Now, what these regulations are is that workers, temporary workers, previously in the past, come to this country under work permits of a certain time period, are allowed to work with a specific employer. After that time, they either have to reapply for a work permit and continue working with the same employer, or go to another employer, or they have to go back to their country of origin. Now, previously, although it was very difficult for temporary workers to get permanent residency in Canada, that route was possible through obtaining multiple work permits and working for quite a bit of time here in Canada. The new regulations make it so that workers are only allowed to work in Canada for 4 years, and after those 4 years, they cannot reapply for extending their work permits. So that, and in addition to that, they're barred actually from re-entering Canada or reapplying for a permit to come into Canada for 6 years after that. So essentially, you've removed the only one of the few ways for people, for migrants to get permanent status here in Canada.
I mean, I don't know if all our listeners are aware what sort of, like, what function do temporary, what is this deal about temporary workers? I mean, people think about immigration, people think about, you know, people from other countries moving here to Canada and becoming citizens. So what is the deal with these temporary workers?
Sure. So there's, I guess there's three major categories of migrants. You have your refugee migrants who come under sort of refugee protections into Canada, and then you have more permanent migrants who are either who come here on a study permit of some kind, or have applied through one of the programs, like a skilled workers program, so that they're professionals who are coming into Canada to have permanent status here eventually. And the third type of migrant that comes into Canada are the temporary migrant workers. These temporary migrant workers are usually, if not always, in very, very low-paid jobs and working in dangerous conditions, and have very little oversight of the jobs they work and the employers they work for. There's countless cases of physical, emotional, financial abuse by employers of these temporary employees. So there was three ways to get permanent status in Canada. The way for temporary workers to get permanent status in Canada has been eliminated. Getting back to your question, the temporary workers serve the Canadian economy as a labor pool that can be easily brought together in cases of labor shortage. So if we don't have enough Canadians to fill these very low paying dangerous jobs, we can just get migrants to do it. With the regulations that are going to affect, the neat thing for the Canadian government is that now they don't have to worry about supplying these, you know, migrants with more permanent jobs and for entering them into, you know, the social system of Canada and taking care of them. They can just use them as indentured or slave labor.
So maybe you can comment on something I'm thinking about this. Perhaps it seems to me that perhaps what we've done here is we've cut out the ability of people who have less access to money, therefore not able to go to school, not coming from wealthy backgrounds where they jump up the points system. We basically have cut out the non-refugee, economically marginalized folks from the entire world coming into this country. So what do you think the implications of that are for vis-a-vis the myth of what Canada is supposed to be?
Sure. So, essentially, the only people who are coming into Canada who are non-refugees are going to be people who are in 38 occupations as defined by the Skilled Workers Program. These 38 occupations are usually managerial positions, professional positions like doctors, engineers, lawyers, or technical positions like technicians. You know, so you're attracting a very rich professional class of migrants into Canada, and so you're making sure that quote-unquote troublemakers are staying out. And you know, that includes not only economically marginalized migrants, but also migrants who, you know, may not be as economically marginalized, but work in professions like, you know, they're social activists or they're social workers. So they're not, they cannot migrate into Canada. So you're attracting a very specific class of, like a specific socioeconomic class, but also a specific education class, but also a specific, I want to say, political class. You know, people who are necessarily going to be a little more conservative in their views than, say, you know, the social activist migrant.
It seems like you're getting at some of the built-in racist and classist structures of the state's immigration policies and privileging. And you mentioned the two classes, basically, is professional classes, then refugee claimants. Another issue that people brought up in that press conference that I'd like you to speak on is Harper government's reaction to refugee claims and how those have been dealt with.
Sure. So in the Globe and Mail on November 2, and now the Globe and Mail isn't some lefty, crazy newspaper, you know, it's a mainstream Canadian newspaper. They reported that refugee claims to Canada have dropped 56% from 2005. And now that's indicative of the stance that Immigration Canada has taken towards refugees, which is that you are lying to us, you are trying to cheat the system, until proven innocent, until proven that, like, yes, you are, you know, you are a refugee. The Immigration Review Board, which reviews all these refugee applications, now takes 18 months to review all these applications. So, you know, if you're a refugee, you know, who's facing an immediate threat to their life or to their well-being, you don't have 18 months to wait for that. So that's one reason. But also the other reason is that they ask for more documentation, they ask for more money, all in an effort to prove the, you know, their point that, you know, somehow that, like, these refugee immigrants are cheating us and taking Canadian jobs, you know, by working in the system. And so they've not only have these refugee claims dropped by 56%, but Jason Kenney and Immigration Canada have decided that in the next few years, refugee, they will strive to reduce the amount of refugee acceptances by 60%.
And I know that Citizenship and Immigration Canada funds services to immigrants, so the sort of immigrant-specific social services, and that those services are funded only for, you know, permanent residents and convention refugees. And, you know, there's so many refugee claimants who wait, you know, at least, I think, you know, generally in the area of 2 years to have their claims processed, who, unless they get a work permit, can't work, and then don't have access to the services that Citizenship and Immigration Canada is funding for, specifically for immigrants. Now, on the note of the some changes in the refugee system, there's also the government has recently made changes that specifically target folks coming from Mexico and the Czech Republic.
Right. So refugee claims from Mexico accounted for were the top. Mexico had the top number of refugee claims to Canadian immigrations, but 90% of those claims are rejected. The reasoning to me is strange, but the reasoning is that, well, you know, if a country is producing this many refugee applications, surely a lot of them are going to be bogus. Again, there's that discourse of you are trying to cheat us until we prove you innocent. I'd also like to point out that we are talking about either a legal or semi-legal migrants right now. There's a whole other class of undocumented migrants, which these new regulations actually make it quite easy to become an undocumented migrant. And that's a whole entirely different situation. There's a lot of injustices once you enter into that sort of class of migrant.
So it reminds me in a certain way, the way you were saying this, all refugees are and people who are trying to immigrate are treated under extreme suspicion. And I mean, from like a Jewish perspective, it reminds me of displaced persons camps after the Second World War. It reminds me of the way the Canadian state refused entry to, you know, countless boatloads of Jews during the Shoah. And I think that that's something that needs to be kept in mind, that this is a system that's, this is a way of thinking in a system that's not new and has been going on for a long time. And it's something that I think that Jews should think about critically.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that history that Jews have experienced that you mentioned in terms of trying to come to Canada, in addition to what the Torah teaches us about the way we treat each other and about our, historical experience with slavery and leaving slavery. I mean, that's something that we remember every Shabbos, right? Every Shabbos, as we say Kiddush, we remember leaving slavery and leaving Mitzrayim. And so, I mean, when I hear Jews who support Jason Kenney, it just totally blows my mind. It's just totally outrageous.
For sure. I mean, taking that, just those two thoughts and what you're speaking about, Usman, one step further with like the concrete examples of refugee claimants being denied, for example, and drawing that parallel of Canada's none is too many policy during the Shoah with regard to refusing entry to Jewish refugees. I mean, the folks from Czech Republic are Roma refugees. These are people facing vehement anti-Roma racism, having their houses being torched, physically, verbally attacked in the streets. You know, this is also happening widespread in Italy as well, other places in Europe. And, you know, as Jews who faced a very similar fate during the Shoah as many Roma people, in addition to a lot of cultural exchange with Roma folks, to sort of, you know, we absolutely can't stand by, not only to respect the teachings of the Torah and to respect the dignity of Roma folks in standing solidarity with them, but also to respect our own history in Europe and elsewhere of oppression and
I just wanted to point out that in the past decade or so, I mean, we've been talking about the history of the Jewish people and not being allowed in. You know, there's been a doubling of deportations in the past decade of migrants here in Canada. And these are people who have come here and the government has decided that, you know, they're not allowed here, you know, or that they're undesirable, and so that they're deported. And actually earlier in the summer and around April, June, there was a roundup of hundreds of temporary workers who had become undocumented in Toronto and elsewhere, and they were similarly deported without any trial, without anything.
Yeah, and I think this leads back to what you were saying about how easy it is to become an undocumented worker. Now, you know, talking about the changes in the laws, I mean, not that the laws around temporary workers were so great already, but the changes in the laws that, and the situation of temporary workers is that once their sort of contract and their work permit is over, now, without being able to reapply, they must leave. Now, you know, what is the actual situation of so many of these people?
It's that, you know, no one decides to leave their country because they want to. I mean, they leave because of economic hardships, and so, or like they're facing some sort of, you know, threat to their well-being. So when they come here, most especially for temporary migrant workers. Now, it might be a different situation for people who come through the skilled workers program or through study permits. It's definitely a different class of people applying for those programs. But for people who are applying to temporary workers programs, they're the ones who are usually economically marginalized in their countries of origin. So there's nothing for them to go back to. So if they can stay here and earn a living, they're going to do that. There's nothing left in their country of origin for them. And one of the regulations actually that made it so easy for temporary migrants to become undocumented previously was that your work permit was made out to a specific employer. So if your employer was abusive, you know, if you had to leave that employer, then you were in violation of your work permit.
So I think we'll take a quick break here, maybe talk a little bit about the culture of fear that the state's promoting with regard to, you know, various marginalized people, and specifically talk about security certificates, and then maybe move on to some of the xenophobic policies being imposed in Europe as well. But in the meantime, we've got Vancouver klezmer musician Jeff Berner with the track Traveler's Curse.
I have been libeled as a wanderer. This is not the case. I have a home. It's just that it's an inconvenient place right now. None is too many of that kind. I overhear you say. You make some markings on the page and stamp and seal my fate. I regret now to inform you who refused to aid my plight. Bad luck will come to those who deny the travelers their rights. All of my pity upon you. All of my pity upon you. My luck can only get better. Yours is bound to be worse. Now I see it upon you, the traveler's curse. Who can deny your moral right to prosperity and order? You fell out of your mother's cunt on the correct side of the border. And your cunt fall gives you all of this and power over me today. But there are forces in this world that can make all that fall away in a second. All of my pity upon you. All of my pity upon you. My luck can only get better. Yours is bound to be worse. Now I see it upon you, the traveler's curse. Pity upon you, all of my pity upon you. My luck can only get better, yours is bound to be worse. Now I see it upon you, the traveler's curse.
Shall always rain. chair, something's on your mind. By that blue look in your brown eyes. I can tell something's on your mind. By that blue look in your brown
back to Radio 613 on CFRC 101.9 FM. We just heard Lal, Brown Eyed Warrior, Lal out of a group out of Toronto, and Jeff Berner with The Traveler's Curse. So we're back here on Radio 613. It's the National Day of Action for Migrant Justice, and we welcome back Usman into the studio, and we've got a full Radio 613 collective today, which is also a nice thing. So let's, you know, we talked about Jason Kenney. We wanted to just give a little bit more, you know, of his bio, share a little bit more. So here's a little quick taste that I just quickly found. This is Jason Kenney on, I believe, I don't know, Channel 2, talking about how the Durban Anti-Racism Conference is directly related to the September 11th attacks.
This is not just a theoretical discussion, Steve. The Durban one happened days before 9/11, and there is a connection between these kind of overt, organized expressions of hatred and violence, which often follow.
Jason Kenney, you know, constantly making sort of claims about the imminent danger of extremism in Canada. You know, often. Subtle, but not always referring, I think, to Canada's Arab and Muslim population. So some of his more racist and Islamophobic comments include him talking about how we shouldn't be we shouldn't be naive about the very real dangers of radicalization of extremism. We shouldn't over-exaggerate it, and nor should we pretend it doesn't exist. And then he sort of goes on to talk about how we don't just, quote, we don't just want a country that is a bunch of different silos where people don't associate with each other. Canada isn't a hotel. So, you know, we will maybe talk another show about the fact that Kenny doesn't seem to recognize that, you know, white folks have been using Canada as a hotel for a couple, 400 years. But we also know that Jason Kenney cut off funding to the Canadian Arab Federation during the last attack on Gaza, when a member of the Canadian Arab Federation spoke critically about the deaths of hundreds and over 1,000 people in Gaza. And then Jason Kenney responded by cutting funding to the Canadian Arab Federation. So, you know, these are the sort of incitement to hate we've come to expect from Jason Kenney.
And I also would note that when Jason Kenney was first told about the woman who was refused refugee status from Mexico, who was killed, and people were sort of had asking him this question about her, and you know, he's sort of laughing through the entire story of what had happened to her. I think he's probably one of the most sort of sadistic politicians that we have in the federal government right now. Openly, sort of obviously, he's under a lot of stress to contain himself right now from his party. And if this is the best he can do, then wow! If they get a majority, like, we're in trouble.
Yeah, and I guess since you're talking back to the audio clip that we listened to, you know, I'll just mention, we mentioned it while we were listening to it, but obviously the mic wasn't on, that, you know, one of the people asking me questions just said that, you know, we're not fooled by your visits to mosques and community centers, and, you know, we're not fooled by his visits to synagogues and Harper's menorah lightings with Lubavitchers either.
So. Right. Don't forget it. You're not invited to Shabbat dinner, Pesach, Seder, Purim party, none of that. Don't bring cameras. In fact, don't even come. Just so it's clear.
I'm sure you're listening right now, too. So.
So we want to quickly, we've got about 15 minutes left, talk about security certificates. Usman, can you maybe give a quick breakdown of security certificates, and then maybe we can talk about some of the local support networks and what's happening with that?
Sure. So security certificates were essentially a Cold War tool to get undesirable non-citizens out of the country or detain them in some way. It turned out to be a really useful tool to have in the new war, you know, war on terror trademark. And so they've been using these security certificates to detain undesirables, specifically, you know, Muslim undesirables in Canada. And there's, don't quote me on this number, but I think there's been in all, like, 19 cases, security certificate cases. But all of them, there was sort of, in the recent past, there was 5 major security certificate cases. And in most of the cases, if not all, there are actually no charges filed against the accused. It's all hearsay, and somehow this security certificate is a token of guilt, and so when it's assigned to a person, that automatically makes them guilty. So, the Kingston Immigration Holding Center, which is in Millhaven, which is in the Millhaven prison, which is very close to here, was the holder of 5 of those men who had been detained under the security certificate process, and one of them was Muhammad Majub.
Yeah, maybe you could quickly talk about who the security certificates have been targeting.
Sure. Well, in all cases, they've been men of color, and in the majority of cases, they've been Muslim or Arab Muslim men of color. And it doesn't matter if you're a citizen or if you're a non-citizen. They've been targeting them in that way indiscriminately. apparently, the citizenship of a Arab Muslim man is different from the Canadian citizenship of let's say Jason Kenney.
So you were speaking about Muhammad Majub, who's been on a hunger strike for the last, I think, nearly 150 days, is that right?
It's 179.
Okay.
He was hospitalized, actually, on the 179th day of his hunger strike. Just to give you a quick background on Muhammad, he was detained for 7 years, in KIHC. Eventually, he was released on house arrest. The house arrest was so restrictive and so just so harmful to his family. One of his kids actually tried to commit suicide because just couldn't handle the constant monitoring and the constant supervision of their life. My favorite story from the Majub household is when the kids got a new Wii, like a Wii video game system, and I guess it wasn't on the approved list for CSIS, and so as the kids are really excited, they plug it in, and you know all these CBSA and CSIS agents just like burst into the room, dive on the Wii, rip it out, and just run away with it. And it was a security threat. The Nintendo Wii is a security threat because it can connect to the internet, which they're not allowed to do. So and the kids were absolutely devastated. But that's the kind of like just insane policies that don't make any sense. But anyway, he actually asked to be put back in prison. He decided he just couldn't put his family through that. So he was in prison, where he began his hunger strike because of his ill treatment there. They would do things like give him spoiled milk, put nails in his meat, intentionally and psychologically disturb him by playing music too loud or by walking over his prayer mat when he repeatedly told the guard like not to do that, intentionally walking over his prayer mat. They left towards the end, they actually left the lights on in his room 24/7, so he couldn't turn them off. So the hunger strike was in protest of that.
And so where is Mohamed Majub now?
So he's been hospitalized because of his condition. He's currently stable. He's in stable condition, and he is off the hunger strike because on Monday, a federal court judge ruled that Mohamed was to be re-released under new conditions into house arrest. Now, those conditions aren't very different from the house conditions, from the arrest conditions that he was released on previously. So we have to see how this plays out. But the big difference is that Mohamed will now get to live away from his family in a separate apartment in an undisclosed location, which will be constantly monitored 24/7. But he can now move around in a designated geographic area without any accompaniment by CSIS or CBSA agents. So if that's freedom,
And what are the charges against him? Oh, we don't know, because there are no charges, right?
Right. In 10 years, this whole saga has been going on for 10 years, and they haven't filed any charges against him. The closest evidence they have that CSIS has against Majub is that, according to a CSIS report, he looked while boarding a bus at his local mall. He looked over his shoulder 3 times, thus exhibiting a security consciousness.
Oh my gosh!
So, a warning to you folks out there: don't look over your shoulder 3 times in a row.
Yeah. For folks who are interested in learning more about Mohamed Majub's case, you can go to peoplescommission.org/en/Majub, MAHJOUB. You can also write a letter, if you feel so inclined, to the Minister of Public Safety, Peter Van Loan. Yeah, so thanks a lot for letting us know about what's going on there.
Yeah, I just want to say something. Like, I mean, with regards to what's going on right now with Muslims in this, quote unquote, global war on terror, I think we have to remind that this is a blanket religious profiling that's going on right now. Not only that, but in the prisons in Afghanistan, in the prisons in Iraq, and the other ones all spread around the world that we don't know about, and in Guantanamo Bay, people have been systematically tortured by use of their religions. We're talking about cutting off of beards. We're talking about, people being humiliated through sexual means. I mean, these tactics are just patently wrong, and if we look at it from any sort of Jewish perspective, it actually harkens you back to things you don't want to think about, and unspeakable and horrible things. Basically, it's disgusting what's going on right now, and that because it's Muslims of, you know, fundamental Islam, people are able to dehumanize people in a way that, you know, we've seen countless times in the past. And, like, let's not, that's where we're at right now. That's what's going on. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I mean, as fake as that term global war on terror is, there's these trends that's across the West. This is this fear mongering and hatred is across the West. And I just want to bring up the banning of minarets that happened in Switzerland last week. The Swiss People's Party, ultra right wing party, proposed a banning of minarets. The symbol going on top of mosques that locate places of prayer for Muslims.
It's a Muslim steeple.
Basically a Muslim steeple. This has been banned in Switzerland. And, you know, like you said, John, for me personally, this is not explicitly my oppression, but it does harken back to things that we try not to think about sometimes because they're so painful, but it is. I mean, this is... There are articles in the paper recently talking about how in Europe, how the problem with this is mostly that it sends the wrong message to Muslims, and it's going to create this backlash. First of all, I don't care about a backlash. It's not time to talk about backlash. Let's talk about what it actually is. What kind of racist Islamophobic policy it is. I don't care about that backlash mess. And then secondly, you know, it gives the right message. It gives the accurate message that this is Europe. This is the state. This is fascism. This is, Constantinian Christianity veiled as a liberal secularism that's talking about tolerance and whatnot. And this is a continent, specifically Europe, with a history of genocide, you know, that I can speak to as a Jew is a fucking pain. 3 minutes and then I can say that is a painful experience, you know. And so, let's not stay silent. Again, I'm not advocating letter-writing campaigns, and who am I going to write to? My foreign minister, occupying Afghanistan, my immigration minister about, refugees and Muslims? No, I'm not going to do that, but I think I'm definitely going to try to build links with people fighting this fascism.
Yeah, and I think our country should in no way be supporting these sort of policies. And the immigration minister Kenny's actions are again, they're sending the same message, maybe in a little less of an oblique way, but it's definitely the same kind of message coming out of a federal government, and the same sort of just angry, bloated faces in our federal government with their sort of staunch lack of empathy. There's a disease of a lack of empathy which has taken hold again in the West, and this is what we're looking at right now. Just terrifying.
Yeah. Usman, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
No, thank you. Do we have time?
You have a minute.
Okay, well, I don't want to... I just wanted to say, I agree with Sean. It's a complete lack of empathy. But it's also... to me, the Islamophobia of the Canadian government is so very clear to see in the way, they process immigration cases, and the way, who they decide is a terrorist, quote-unquote terrorist. So, I would actually disagree with you, Sean, say that, the Islamophobia here... and racism here is as apparent as the banning of minarets, but maybe we just don't pick up on it as much.
Tune in next week, Radio 613, Wednesday, 5:00 to 6:00.
Now I'll make something else. Bye-bye.